There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. How are you doing?
Good. It's been a busy week. So, yeah. But looking forward to the weekend and warm weather and maybe the pool.
Finally. Yeah. And yeah. You just turned 40. So happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah.
So today we have a special guest as well as our good friend and real estate entrepreneur, Jim Zaspel. Hey, Jim, how are you doing?
Hey, Joni. Great to be here. Thank you both for having me. And again, happy birthday, Sean.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I think you got a lot to offer and add a ton of value. And I know you got great stories and you're a good storyteller. So I'm looking forward to it.
Really cool story. Yeah. So just a little brief bio on Jim. So Jim Zaspel's journey to a thriving real estate career was not a conventional one. He began as a frustrated landscaper who had grown tired of all the challenges that came with the industry. As an entrepreneur at his heart since preteen days, Jim knew there was a better creative outlet for him and a better way he could help others. His interests in real estate were first realized when his first deal, a house in Norristown, Pennsylvania, where he cleared $13,800. Since then, Jim has made a huge career leaps in a short amount of time. Despite early setbacks in real estate after starting over in 2014, Jim's company wholesales, fix and flips, buys and rents about 150 to 200 houses per year. That's pretty amazing, Jim. In addition to his own success, Jim has always working to share his expertise and bolster the success of other newcomers to real estate investing. He has taught countless workshops and seminars, co-written a best-selling book, been featured on many podcasts as an expert interview, and delivered keynote speeches at the Collective Genius, the nation's most elite real estate mastermind, and much more. But for Jim, business is simply a means to fuel and fill his lifestyle vision. As a father of three children and a devoted husband, family time is extremely important to him. Thanks to his team, his systems, and refusal to let work get in the way of life, he gets all his work done after having breakfast with his family every morning and before he gets home from dinner. So again, thanks so much, Jim, for being here today with us. Love to hear your story. And so if you want to give us a little bit of background on yourself, and I'll let you go from there.
Awesome. Well, again, super excited to be here. So a lot of people I've noticed, like especially Collective Genius where we met, have these glamorous or exciting careers before this, and not me. I've done two things for money in my life. I started mowing neighbors' lawns when I was 12 years old, and I grew in a little landscaping business and kept doing that until I failed at it when the economy kind of fell apart in 07, 08. And my dad, a few years prior, had bought me a book by a guru who's actually now a member of CG, Collective Genius. And so when I was 18, he bought this book. When I'm 21, almost 22, I finally read that book. It was by Ron LeGrand. And I got to reading this book, and it was, all you need to know about buying and selling houses, get this free book, just pay shipping and handling, right? At the back end of the book, there was this offer, get these CD set for like $45. I bought the CD set and I called the phone number. They said, hey, make sure you listen to the CD set at least once the next 7 days after you get it. I'm going to call you. We're going to brainstorm. This telemarketer is telling me this. I'm going to brainstorm with you, Jim, on how to start your real estate investing business. I said, awesome. Thank you so much. It setting me up so much. I was so naive. I had no idea, right? So I listened to the CD set three times, not once, three times. And I was so excited for this phone call. And he got through the pitch. And then he said, hey, Ron asked me to invite you. I thought it was a personal invitation. Ron asked me to invite you to this upcoming boot camp in Chicago for 5 days. We're going to learn all this stuff. I said, great. Tell him I said, I really appreciate it. I said, just so you know, I've got a negative net worth by about three times right now. So I've got like seven free liquid. I've got about $19,000 in credit card debt, but I'll find a way to be there. He said, awesome. How do you want to pay the $5,000 registration fee, Visa or Amex? I'm like, what? So I took the money out of my Roth IRA. I started when I was like 14 or 13, and wow. I paid that $5,000.
Wow.
And I think that's an example of sometimes we've got to help people make the hard decisions that are best for them in life, right?
I'm just curious, what was that like meeting him? Like, I don't know if you had met him before, but in the mastermind and then like going back, you know, to like, hey, I'm sitting in the same room, you know, we're in, I don't know, the same life, the same level, but, you know, sitting there meeting the guy that started you off. That's kind of cool, right?
It is really cool. Yeah. It was, it's really fun. You had two totally different levels, like, but yeah, it was kind of exciting, right? You know, it's when all life happens. So yeah. Anyway, that was the end of 2008, did my first deal in March of 2009. And that was a bunch of hundreds of houses ago. And that's this, grew up in a little lower middle class family, college dropout, homeschooled all 12 years. And pretty simple. Just
And your dad's a pastor, right? Or was?
Yes, he is. Okay. Yeah, still is. Yeah. Still is. Part-time professor at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary as well. And awesome. He's written a bunch of books and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Pretty cool.
So I remember there was a good story you used to tell about I don't know if it was when you had to start over, but I remember there was a good story. You got on the news and then you, and not in a good way.
Taking it back.
I don't know if that's a good story, but it's a story.
It's a story that has probably scarred you.
So within about 2.5 years of getting started in real estate, I had bought or controlled through like a lease option, 46 units, 29 buildings. And on paper, I think I was making like 15 grand a month cash flow.
Wow.
And that happened, I think, 1 month. And then, I was just the world's, I was 24 years old at this time, maybe 25, 24, I think. And just the world's worst landlord. Tenants would say, hey, I can't pay rent this month. I said, don't worry about it. And I believed every sob story I was told. And anyway, I said, by the way, just pay me next month and forget about the late fee. I know it's a difficult time for you. Just like, I was just as dumb as they get. And so before I know it, 8 out of 46 people are paying, units are performing a month.
And, wow.
That's just not a good ratio.
Yeah.
I don't know what you guys are, your numbers are in your property management business, but I hope it's better than 8 out of 46.
Yeah, a lot better. I'd be, we probably wouldn't be on this call if it was that bad. But
yeah, right?
Lots of cash for keys. Just kidding.
Yeah, lots of cash for keys. So anyway, just like everything started crumbling. And it's not the tenant's fault. It's not the contractor's fault. It was my fault. I just didn't manage the business well. And, I discovered, at least for me, when I was desperate, I did a lot of desperate things, right? Mm-hmm. And so I did a couple of deals that weren't right. It's a couple of subject to deals. Nothing wrong with subject to, but I didn't do it the right way. Lost one or two houses to foreclosure that I'd sold on a lease option, and people lost their deposits. I made it all right, but it was rough, like October of 2012. So there it was, the girl I thought I wanted to marry dumped my ass because I was on 11 o'clock news, kicked out of all the RIA meetings. I was depressed. Like, that was like the only time in my life I'm depressed. And living at my parents' house and $300,000 in debt. And like all my employees, including VAs, quit. Wow. Right? It was just a rough time.
Yeah. No, I mean, I appreciate you sharing that, because the big thing with this podcast and what we try to do is like educate people. We have a lot of people that are new to real estate investing or just being an entrepreneur. And, you know, like, especially with social media these days, you see all the great scenes, you know, and all the supposedly everything's going well, but like,
you don't see the struggles or failures.
Yeah. Yeah, so
absolutely.
I'm sure you learned a ton from that, and rebuilt. And luckily you had share with me, like, how did you come out of that though? Mentally and then maybe even business wise.
Yeah. It's hard. Cause like, I don't know, like, it's hard to see your way out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to a friend of mine talk. Sometimes when you're in those down times, you've got to just trust that you can get out and just take the next step. You don't know, you need to see every step, take the next step. But I remember it was, I think, January of 2013. I just got finished setting New Year's goals and whatnot. And I thought, you know, for full disclosure, like, I was dodging everybody's phone calls, ignoring emails. Like, it was just, I was not responding to anybody. It's being totally immature. I thought, you know, I'm better than this. I was raised better than this. I know better. And so in one day I called every single person I owed money to. And said, listen, I got good news. I got bad news. The good news is I'm going to pay you back. I'm going to pay you something every single month until you're paid back. The bad news is I don't know how I can pay you more than 10 bucks a month. And some months it'll be 10 bucks. And by the way, some months it was $10. I paid, starting then, I paid somebody or everybody something every single month.
Wow.
So I think it starts with like facing your fears. I mean, if you got like crap you got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they didn't all like the answer. They didn't appreciate. They were like, oh, thank you so much. No, I got no thank yous. Like, okay, we'll see how you do.
Right.
And I was actually expecting thank you for calling me, as I didn't get any of those.
Yeah.
but so that was like the first step. And then I'll tell you the second step. So I told you I got kicked out of all the RIA meetings. I used to go to all of them. And I decided if I can't join them, I'll beat them. And so I wanted to start my own RIA meeting with two goals. One was to out-earn the reputation I had earned myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second goal was to have the biggest monthly group of real estate investors in Philadelphia, which I wound up accomplishing with Marina. But here's the funny part, and then I'll move on to answer your question. In February 20th, 2013, I was having my first RIA meeting. It was in the back room of a Panera Bread, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 27 people were registered on meetup.com to show up. And the day of my first meeting, remember, not as depressed, a little depressed, still dead broke, still single, and still wishing I wasn't. Like, it was just, oh, Jimmy was not happy. And the day of that first meeting, there were a couple other, you know, people who had investor groups and big wholesalers and realtors, about six or seven people sent an email out to their whole list saying, you know, Jim's a real, well, fill in the blank. And by the way, I think twice about going to his meeting tonight. Here's the link to the 6 ABC News interview.
Wow.
And like, I just like the phone call started coming in and like, I cried for like 10 minutes. And
wow.
I just feel sorry for myself. And I almost called off the meeting because I was afraid to face, you know, the fear of like, you know, public rejection. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I didn't. So I decided to do it. I sent another email to Melissa. Hey, we're on. I'll address your concerns tonight. We're on. So I did the meeting. And you know who showed up to that meeting? It was Marina. That's where we met.
Wow.
My wife, yeah. And she was kind of curious all this drama she wanted to put on.
She's like, I can fix this. I can fix this.
She's a keeper because
she
met you at your lowest. So, and then, yeah, that's an awesome story.
Yeah.
I didn't know all that. Or maybe you told me and I don't remember. Or, so just so you know, Jim, we've had some great dinners together. So I think your first Collective Genius meeting, we met and had dinner with you. But we've had a lot of wine. And I remember that one time when we were like, yeah, we're going to do a
triathlon.
Yeah.
You guys
Ironman.
Committed to it.
Ironman, half Ironman. I think it was a half. Maybe it was a full.
It was a half.
Yeah, but and thank God it got wiped out in COVID, so eliminated, so I didn't have to do it.
I was so disciplined, man. I was training every day. So go again. I'm like, screw this. Let's train.
And we were holding each other accountable for a little while, but then it kind of...
Well, I know these two here. I mean, once you commit to something, that's it. It's going down.
So, what does your business look like today? Like, what do you, you know, because I think that's a great, you know, people need to hear that, like that... It's, I mean, Joni, I've had them ups and downs and it's like a roller coaster sometimes. And I think, you know, you built something really great and you had a lot of cash flow and then it totally tanked and went the other way and you hit rock bottom, but then you have a really cool business today. So tell us about it. Like what does it look like today? Employees, number of houses, what do you do?
Sure. So we're about 15% fix and flip, 15%, you know, buying rentals, maybe 15 and 20. And then the balance is wholesale. So last year we did 154 deals.
It's amazing.
Fixed and flipped 30, bought 28 rentals, and then wholesale the rest. And this year we're trending and tracking right about similar numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit less fix and flips, more wholesales than that. Somewhere, you know, 12 or so a month, give or take. And I think we're selling four tomorrow, which is exciting.
That's awesome.
That's what we did. We've got 60-something rentals. Not like you guys, but those are all bought in the last 3 years.
That's awesome. Well, I know that Marina was riding alongside you, you know, building this business and, you know, with the kids. I know there's a million things going on for her. So she's still, you know, riding alongside you and building the business with you?
No. And it actually, like, really, so when I started over, like, she started and, like, we kind of grew it together. Uh-huh. It was great. And in 2018, she really started stepping out of the business to be with the kids.
Right.
Which was a decision we went through together, and you know, I support it fully. I didn't realize how much I needed her in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so 2018, 2019, did a ton of deals, like 180 something houses in 2019. I made no money. I mean, I made no money in 2019.
Wow.
You know, it's like 186 houses and made no money. This is not cool. It's not supposed to work this way. I don't want
you're taking all the risk. Why am I not making money?
Yeah. And you know, I was being a sloppy, you know, visionary business owner who didn't really take care of stuff real well. You know, so I got a lot more disciplined in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And made my, so she works 3/4 of 1 day a week, and very valuable 3/4 of 1 day, but she does. She keeps a tight rein to finances, which I very much appreciate. And she asks really insightful questions and tells me what to do. It's awesome.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Very cool.
So tell me, how are you, what's your like best lead source? And like, how are you, you know, 'cause I think a challenge that a lot of investors are facing right now is like, the market's so hot, it's hard to find deals, but you're still doing 100 and what'd you say, 180 or, you know,
200.
Mm-hmm. 200 deals. Like, how are you finding deals still? Is it, you know, how do you overcome that challenge?
Sure. I actually did a Facebook Live video. It says like, so your marketing campaign doesn't work. You know, check these 7 boxes before you throw in the towel on a marketing campaign, right? And really, what a market like this does is it makes us all get better and more efficient, right? So just real quick, what are the steps of a marketing campaign? If you're doing direct mail, you've got to, you're viewing your data, you got to make sure you're tracking everything, you know, monitor and measure your answering rates, your live answer rates, how many abandoned calls, audit your phone calls with your lead managers. You know, how far out are you booking appointments from the call comes in when a home buying specialist meets the seller? Are you auditing those seller meetings? What are those numbers like? How trained are they? How are they staying on top of the game? If you're wholesaling, what's your dispo process like? So there's so many steps in a deal from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we say a marketing campaign doesn't work, but really the market just got a little tighter and that marketing channel still works. We're just sloppy operators. And so that's like my first comment. My lead sources, so we spend just under 40 grand a month in marketing. It used to be more, but it's like 40 right now. About 25 of that is on TV and the balance is on direct mail. That's it. We stopped doing texting. We weren't that big in it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then I probably should turn back on my PPC, at least by retargeting. I don't know, for political reasons that I'm not giving these organizations my money. Screw them. But we won't go there. Yeah. And this, now it's just TV and direct mail.
Yeah. Wow. Are you the face of the TV ads?
I'm not.
You're not.
I'm not. But I'm going to reach, like, the effectiveness has waned a bit. So I emailed them recently. We need to shoot some more ads. I think I want to try doing something different.
Yeah. I wonder if the female, you know, version works versus the male, or you know, since you're such a star on TV in your market, you know, maybe getting you back on there. So yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah. But and what does it take to run a business like that? How many staff? You know, and what does your average day look like?
So how many staff? It's about 10. I actually hired my COO. He starts on Monday.
So oh, awesome. Sweet. Congratulations.
Yeah. Super excited. It's a big step, but very excited about the individual and about the prospects of it. So we've got 3 acquisitions managers. And what these guys do is they go meet with the sellers and negotiate a deal and get contracts signed. Then we've got 2 right now, will be 3 lead managers. Now we have 1.5 transaction coordinators, full-time dispo, dispositions, project manager, and then some other part-time virtual staff as well.
And what's your day look like? Typical. What do you do day to day?
Yeah, so my days start with
posts on Facebook all the time. Yeah.
besides posts on Facebook all the time. Yeah.
Don't worry, Jimmy tells me that all the time too.
Going live on Facebook, usually in your car, I think, right?
Almost always in my car, yeah. It's like, what else am I going to do?
Might as well make it productive, right?
That's right. I remember Mike Jake posted like this thing like a year ago on Facebook. Mike Jake's friend from CG.
Yeah.
He says, he's like, what's with all these people doing Facebook videos while they're driving? It's terrible. It's not safe. But, you know, he's always doing videos of himself driving 200 miles an hour. But just so we're clear, it's safe at 200 miles an hour, right?
Correct, yeah. And, I mean, his eyes are at least on the road, you know, not on the camera and video.
Yeah. So that's what he pointed out. I'm like, dude, I tried not to say it, but I just couldn't resist. But anyway, besides Facebook, I start off with two daily huddles. From like 8 o'clock, like I do BS with the emails and stuff like that. Then at 8:45, I have an acquisitions huddle that goes till 9, maybe 9:10. Mm-hmm. Then at 9:15, on those acquisitions huddles, this is not deal analysis time. It's just how many appointments yesterday? What was the outcome of each? Mm-hmm. What's one appointment that you can push over the edge for today? Mm-hmm. And what's your commitment for action items that you can control today? So it's like a 5-point bullet for each person. And then the similar outline for the dispositions huddle at 9:15. And then I go on Facebook and just, you know, click around and see what's up. Yeah. But now that I'm always just keeping an eye on deals. Beyond that, I have no routines. I try to do one or two lunches a week with maybe it's a vendor, maybe it's another investor local. Uh-huh.
That's awesome. I mean, that's key. Do you find that, because I think we only meet like once a week for, you know, certain departments, and I think that's probably genius, especially with the sales. And it's not, you're not going like probably real deep, but you probably course correct a lot of things real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yeah. What I found is it keeps everybody accountable. So they've got to have their after action notes in our CRM mm-hmm. after the sales meeting. And if they show up the next morning huddle and their previous day's notes aren't on there, it's like, dude, where are your notes from yesterday's two meetings mm-hmm. or three meetings? So there's this accountability that comes up. And also, you know, who likes to show up to a daily huddle and say, I got zero contracts yesterday and everybody else got one or two.
Yeah.
So that accountability on a few different levels is very helpful.
I love that. We do huddles in our entire organization, but not just departments. So I think I love that idea.
Are you able to, how do you overcome, I'm asking you a lot of questions for me personally, but hopefully people will benefit from it. So I've always struggled with like, I got it all in my mind, like how to analyze a deal or like, so how you decide between a wholesale, if you're going to keep it as a flip or a rental, you know, how are you distinguishing that with your acquisition reps? Or is that something that you're going through? So you're talking about their leads, what they, you know, and going through them. How do you decipher which bucket they go into?
Sure. So as with most of my answers, I've got a story.
That's perfect.
So back in January this year, I think part of the reason I was getting a little burnt out at that time was I was confident. We were booking 60, 70, some weeks, 90 appointments a week.
Wow.
It's crazy, right? Just ridiculous. It was some of those appointments should not have been booked, but we were. And I was the one pulling comps and all those leads. Like, this is stupid. So rather than having each acquisitionist comp their own appointments, because I want to get their head out of the math, out of the analytical stuff, and mm-hmm. focus more on the sales psychology mm-hmm. of the transaction. So I have them pulling comps on each other's appointments. So they give each other, hey, here's a low anchor price. Here's where I think it's going to go. Looks like a straight wholesale deal, right? So that's in terms of like pre-appointment, they do each other's research, not their own. Mm-hmm. It just keeps their focus on the salesmanship of the conversation versus the analytical side. I learned that from Eric Brewer, and so far it's working well. In terms of what do I wholesale, what do I fix and flip, I hate doing construction in the city of Philadelphia. It's just a pain in the butt for a lot of reasons. So if it's in Philly, like with virtually no exceptions, I'm not buying it. So it's a wholesale.
Hmm.
So that's easy. If it's in the suburbs and it's a desirable area, then I'm virtually with no exceptions going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not, usually it's pretty clear, but like 20% of the time it's not. And so they might, you know, get my opinion on that one specific deal. And, you know, sometimes I decide before the contract, sometimes after, you know, maybe due diligence period in there.
Yeah. That's good. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, now you got a good, it seems like obviously you're doing something right. If you got 180 deals a year or 200, what have you learned that you can give advice on running like a sales organization, you're, you know, running three different acquisition reps and lead managers. Do you have any takeaways that you would like to share?
Everybody's full of crap.
Except for you, right?
Everybody, except for me and you and the two of you. But especially salespeople.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that is just accountability is so important. Right. And so with the lead managers, if people are answering the phones or making outbound dials, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have empirical data that we, you know, measure with our phone system. They can't tell me how many outbound dials they made. The dashboard told me, right? They can't tell me how many appointments they booked. We've got it's all logs, all connected in CRM. So just empirical data for the sake of accountability, I think is very important. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. And then I would say the same thing with the acquisition reps. This is why I think the daily huddle is so important with them, because they're like the biggest, it's like herding cats, right? They're the most individually minded of all of my employees. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's that daily accountability is important. And you got to hold their feet to the fire with regards to commitments, with regards to, I'll tell you another story, just a real quick one. I had an acquisitionist, obviously not going to give his name, but he's a great, I think he's a truly good person. Mm-hmm. He was with me 3.5 months and he brought in 93 contracts.
Wow. Mm.
Right? That's a lot of stinking contracts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3.5 months. And I made a lot of money off of him. And then there was a significant HR issue with him. I had to let him go instantly, which left me with a whole big crap storm. And so we started calling all these sellers that he had contracts with. And, you know, he might have signed up like 95% LTV, told him he would close cash in 2 weeks. Right? He would just say whatever had to be said
to get the deal done,
to get a contract. And that's just not who we are. That's not sustainable.
Right.
And so when somebody's scripting goes off, because you know, now there's multiple people talking to the seller after the acquisitions does, mm-hmm. we got to, dude, adjust your, like, what are you saying? No. And like, I'll call the seller. Hey, I'm sitting here with Eric and I'm really sorry you were told this. He's new. Don't worry. You know, here's what we can actually do. Do you want to continue or do you want to terminate? And if you give a seller the opportunity to terminate because the acquisition has made a wrong promise, like they straighten up their act real quick.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, so yeah. Are you having your lead managers follow up on every call now? Or
is you that, mean after
after every appointment or contract? Yeah.
We have a whole process for doing that. I think I actually shared that at CG a few months ago for like depending on the stage of lead, what our follow-up looks like. But yeah, we have I should know this exact number. It's around half of our appointments booked are from previously run appointments that at least 6 months old. We don't rebook if it's more recent than 6 months. And we wind up getting contracts that way.
Sweet. Do you believe in, I know this was like a debate, but do you believe in phone, trying to close over the phone versus appointments in person? Do you have a preference?
I'm going back and forth, man. So it's like, here's the challenge. You can do so many more appointments over the phone. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to pre-screen because there's very little vested effort. But your closing rate is going to be better in person. All that matters is what's the ROI of marketing dollars. Mm-hmm. Only that matters. So you got to kind of do the math to break that down. We do both, to answer your question. We used to do only in person. Then the pandemic hit, we did only phone. And now it's all of our initial appointments are on the phone. But I tell my acquisitionist, I say, listen, they each have 2 half-day slots a week just for in-person meetings. So they talk to somebody on Monday. Hey, listen, how about we meet tomorrow around 3 o'clock in the afternoon? And let's, I can take a look at the house, sharpen my pencil on the number, and we can go over the paperwork then and get that clock started. And we can go do the paperwork tomorrow. Because a lot of people just aren't comfortable with DocuSign. Since we implemented that, we've seemed to, we get about 2/3 of our contracts signed in person, but usually started with the phone appointment.
That's pretty cool. So tell us a little bit about your current goals and maybe some of your 5-year goals.
Sure. People ask me this, and I always kind of struggle. I don't know how long it's going to take. I saw this question ahead of time. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is going to be, but I'll just say that. So I think that we can get to doing around 200 houses a year profitably. Mm-hmm. I think we can do that probably within a year. I think within 5 years, maybe 3, we'll be at 200 rentals. Mm-hmm. And I think this will be more like a 2 or 3 year goal, we'll see, but 100,000 square feet of self-storage under ownership. That's my goal. I don't know if that's like 3 years or 5 years. Those are my goals. By the time I'm 50, my goal is to have $100,000 a month in net residual income from rental, storage, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think those goals are in line with that.
Are you have you been divesting into self-storage?
I bought my first one on New Year's Eve.
Awesome. Sweet.
It's a small facility. We're expanding it.
How's that going?
It's good. It's 100% full. It's awesome. I've learned that a land development plan, even on a small site, is $40,000. It's exciting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Everything's a lot more than you think. You're like, that's like $5,000.
Yeah. It's like a supersized survey, right? It's like, 5 grand.
Yeah, these engineers, why are they getting paid so much?
Right.
But and congratulations on the new home. I hear, a family estate, right? Is that?
Yeah, no, we're excited. It's just under 6,000 square feet above grade. Awesome. And then it's on 6.5 acres. And then we bought, there's one parcel that touches it. And then there's a third parcel that touches it where we're buying as well, all from the same seller. Crazy, divorced people, they don't talk to each other. He's an absolute jerk. They each have an attorney. There are two listing agents involved, and there's a brother-in-law. And it was the world's most complicated negotiation.
Whenever there's that kind of complications, there's opportunity, right?
Yeah, for sure.
100%.
Yeah. Well, that's sweet.
So, Jim, I have a question for you. So I know you do a great job of balancing, you know, home life and business life. How do you do it?
How do I do it? So, one is like, you know, Marina, my wife, helps kind of keep me straight, right? Mm-hmm. But before we got married, I always use this analogy. Before we got married, I was working like 60 hours a week, and my wife was working like 50. And we did like 30 houses, right? Mm-hmm. And we decided that before we got married, listen, you know, because you know, my wife had her son from her previous marriage, and so we wanted to have a family life from day one, not just a work couple. And so we said, let's have these bookends that we like, virtually with no exceptions, we ever violate them. And that is, we have breakfast together as a family, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't get up and, you know, do my Peloton and then run out the door. I get up, do my Peloton, take a shower, have breakfast with the family. We make breakfast in the kitchen. It's a relaxed, like 45 to 60 minute ordeal. Then I take my steps onto school and then we go. Then I go off to work. So we set these boundaries and refuse to violate them with almost no exceptions. And that alone, just like all of a sudden, if you force yourself to do it, I found it, you figure it out. It sounds too simple, but that's part of it. But
Sweet. I mean, usually the simplest things that people take for granted are usually.
Yeah, absolutely. So very cool. Well, thanks for sharing that.
What I'm just curious. If I know you did a lot of education back in the day, and you taught and you built one of the largest RIAs there in Philadelphia. So if you were just starting out today, can you give some advice on how you get started and what to look for?
Yeah, I think that I would say two things, three things, I'll do three. One is, and this is just like a way you've got to approach life, I think, as an entrepreneur, and this is part of what like led to my early failure, mm-hmm. is I was just afraid to face my fears, right? What were some of my fears? Firing a contractor, raising private capital, going through the mental, emotional anguish of evicting tenants. So you just got to face those fears regardless. Like my biggest fear today that I face in my company, not at the moment, but in general, is firing employees. I hate it. Like I love everybody that works here, but when the time comes, you've got to do, you know, mission first, team first, you know, person, team member last, right? And so it's like you got to face your fears, I think, is the most important thing. Next is you've just got to always be learning. But unfortunately, a lot of people get stuck in that. Mm-hmm. So where do you learn? You learn from local people who are doing the business. Podcasts like this, Bigger Pockets is a great resource. There are plenty of good seminars out there. So you got to get some education, but you know, most important, action is more important than education. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I always ask people, and they say, I've been getting into real estate, and they tell me if they're either struggling or doing well, I always ask one question. How many sellers are you talking to a day, or how many offers are you making a day? And if their answer is, oh, I'm networking or going to a seminar, like, dude, stop deluding yourself.
That's so true, though, because we just talked about that in our last podcast where, I mean, you know, there's so many of us just, they get soaked up on the education piece and they don't ever do anything with it, right?
Or they're setting up their LLC and it's like they haven't even bought a house. You know, just
get out there, make something happen, create the problem.
Yes. Yeah, awesome. So that's it. Like, if you've already started to get started in this business and you think you're getting started, ask yourself every day, how many people did I talk to about selling their house? If that answer is like one, like, get off your ass and get to work.
Yeah, awesome. Totally.
What about any good books you can recommend, or that your favorite book or one you're reading now?
Yeah, I think that the book that I was thinking about this, the book that I think is one of the most insightful for me. I used to listen to a lot of Brian Tracy and read a lot of his books. He wrote two books that I just found very helpful early on. One was, the book is called Goals. That's it, Goals by Brian Tracy. Okay. Another one was Maximum Achievement. I would, if you had to pick one, I picked the second one. Maximum Achievement by Brian Tracy talks about the psychology of it and kind of the success mindset. And I absolutely loved it.
Sweet. Yeah. All right. You got any other questions?
No, I think that's it. Well, Jim, we appreciate you being on today. Any last minute words there?
Or how can they get involved with you? Or I don't, you know, I know you're not doing the, I just found out today you're not doing the education piece anymore, but I thought you still were involved in that. But I mean, if, you know, people want to reach out to you or people are local to your market, maybe private lenders, whatever, you know,
sure.
You know, how can they get in touch with you?
I'd say the best way to reach out to me is on Facebook. I've got this email filter that, like, I see nobody's emails except for like five people, and everything else just goes away. So just reach out on Facebook. I'm the only Jim Zaspel on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Jim Zaspel. And send me a message request to reach out. We'll connect on there.
Yeah, you got to check out his
Facebook
lives.
Keep doing those
Facebook
lives. I love it. I listen to them all the time. So
I'm like, oh, no, here
Sean
comes.
Sean is like anti-Facebook.
No,
he's
cool.
On there like twice a year.
No, we really appreciate you being on, and I think that was great. And, you know, if we can ever do anything for you, please let us know. And we'll see you, what, in June?
Yes, we'll see you in June. Marina's going to come this time.
Oh, yay.
You
know, that's awesome.
Yeah, that should be a good time. So.
All right, thank you both.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care, Jim.
All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.